from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny, and we are broadcasting this morning live from the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. On June 3rd, the San Francisco MoMA will close its doors for nearly 3 years as part of a massive $610 million expansion project that will add a new wing, nearly doubling the museum's gallery space. Forum will bid farewell to the SF MoMA in its current state with a special broadcast today from the Schwab Room, and we'll talk about plans for the museum's future and the off-site programming SF MoMA will present at other museums around the Bay Area during the temporary closure. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning. We are coming to you live from the Schwab Room of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art with a live audience. Good to have this live audience here. And the San Francisco MoMA, if you haven't been current on this, is temporarily going to be shut down. That's not why they're applauding. They're applauding because we're here, and they're also applauding because there's a lot of celebration built around the fact that it is going to be, well, on the road, with a museum without walls. For a couple of years, it'll be expanding, transforming itself into a much larger, that's 2 to 3 times its present size, approximately 235,000 square feet more, to a new envisioned museum model scheduled for opening in early 2016. In the meantime, it will be offering you much, and we'll find out what it's going to be offering you throughout the Bay Area as a museum without walls and doing a kind of number of other partnerships with other museums, moving off-site locations throughout the Bay Area. 89%, by the way, at least as I last saw it calibrated, of the $610 million capital campaign money has been raised, and there are celebration activities that are being planned here at Third Street. Let me tell you who is with us, in fact, here at Third Street. Neil Ben-Ezra is director of San Francisco MoMA, and welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you.
Janet Bishop, also with us this morning, is curator of painting and sculpture for the San Francisco MoMA, overseeing On the Go, a series of community exhibitions and programs that will be held during the construction period. Welcome.
Good morning.
And we'll also say good morning to our friend Kenneth Baker, who is here, art critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning, Ken.
Hello, Michael.
Glad to have you all. And Neil, what's all the celebration about? You're going to be gone for 2 years.
Well, the museum's going to close for 2.5 years here at SF MoMA as we embark on our construction project, which will be complete in the beginning of 2016. And we had a real choice to make, whether we should close the building and run a small program in a facility somewhere around the city, or whether we could do something a little more inventive, a little more literally out of the box, and operate our, I think, quite wonderful exhibition program in museums and public spaces around San Francisco and Northern California over the next couple of years.
Well, in fact, the idea behind that, I guess, is to do some things experimentally, to try some new innovative things, and then to maybe incorporate them into this new vision that will be 2.5 years hence.
The new snow-headed design space for the museum features a sense of openness, architecturally, a sense of openness, welcome, embrace, if you will. And we would like our program for the next couple of years to kind of kickstart that idea as we move around the city and around the Bay Area. And we have a couple of exhibitions that actually travel around the state of California and one that's going to Paris.
And this will be the largest gallery in the United States. At least from what I read.
Well, that's...
I'm just talking about size now, right?
We will be one of the largest museums of contemporary art anywhere in the country, if not the world.
I thought the expansion, particularly taking in the Fisher collection, everything is really going to put you up there in the stratosphere in terms of museum size.
In terms of museum size, we will be roughly the size of the Museum of Modern Art in New York in terms of gallery square footage.
What are you trying to really accomplish by this? I mean, other than the fact that you're expanding, growing, and what a moving job, I keep thinking.
We're keeping the movers quite busy these days. You know, the museum has been a tremendous success since we moved here in 1995. We opened these doors just 18 short years ago. And I think to everyone's surprise and excitement and pleasure, We've grown exponentially since that time. Our membership, our collection, our exhibition programs, everything, our tenants, all have grown by two and three times. And it's became clear about, I would say, as early as 2007, 2008, that we were really going to need to expand just to sustain the work that we're doing, much less grow. And then with the Fisher Collection coming to the museum, this really gave us additional impetus to grow the museum.
I think San Francisco Magazine said this is like Ocean's 11 without the heist. I mean, it is quite an extraordinary undertaking.
It is. We have about 30,000 works in the collection, and they've been stored in various places here in the museum, also in rented art storage space, and we still have, until just recently, we have had art stored in the basement of the War Memorial Building, where we've had art since 1935, since the museum first opened.
So increasing your education program, increasing digital technology, this beautiful garden that's planned. We talked about the architecture about a year ago on Forum. Any downsides, layoffs, for example?
Well, with the closure of the museum, obviously there are certain positions that you know, are not necessary for the next couple of years. And we've worked through a staffing plan over the last couple of months with a small group of staff members, and we're sorry to see them go. But I think this two-year period is going to pass quickly, and the staff will grow quite a lot when we open this much larger building.
Will the congestion grow around here in this part of the city?
I hope not, but I fear it will.
Well, what are we doing about that? I mean, in terms of precautionary measures.
Well, much of the building is oriented around public transportation. So we're very close to, obviously, the public transportation on Market Street, BART, the Muni, and so forth. But one of the things that's very important is the new Transbay Terminal that's going to be opening in the next couple of years, just to the east of us, will actually thrust pedestrians into the city in the direction of the museum, down Minna and down Natoma Streets.
Again, Neil Ben Ezra is director of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, and Janet Bishop is curator of painting and sculpture, and you're already on the move. I mean, you're at Chrissy Field, right, with sculptures. Talk about that.
So the first exhibition to open as part of our taking our program on the go is Mark de Souvereau, and Neil was actually the curator for that exhibition, which features eight sculptures in a completely unexpected setting. That opened on May 18th, and for those of you who haven't been down to Chrissy Field yet to see de Souvereau's works, I think they really look fantastic in relationship to the waterfront and the Golden Gate Bridge. It's really special to have those pieces here. I mean, de Souvereau actually came from China as a child underneath the Golden Gate Bridge before his family settled in San Francisco, so it feels like a true homecoming.
Well, let's talk about the bigger picture, because there are a lot of partnerships and there are a lot of things in the offing here in terms of working with other museums, for one thing. Yeah,
it's, I think, one of the incredible sort of upsides of this period of time is being able to partner with our neighbors in this way. You know, we've got the collection is really, you know, the heart and soul of the museum in so many ways. And, you know, 2.5 years just seemed like, you know, too long a period of time to keep it all to ourselves, you know, either tuck it away into storage or just engage in research projects with the collection. And we thought, you know, what could we do during this time period to continue to make the collection available? And so we started talking to our peers at the Contemporary Jewish Museum and the Cantor Art Center, the Fine Arts Museums, and others, and realized that, you know, we could, if we joined forces, we could create a really interesting program of exhibitions that are based either entirely or in a substantial way from SF MoMA's holdings, and in presenting those in different contexts, really stand to learn quite a lot from those projects.
So let's talk a little bit about what's at least coming up. I mean, you mentioned first the Contemporary Jewish Museum, something with Rothko and spirituality I was reading about. No?
Right. So our doors close here at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock on June 2nd, and really as soon as we can safely pack things up and get them sort of, you know, two blocks away over to the CJM, we will open our exhibition, which is titled Beyond Belief, 100 Years of the Spiritual in Modern Art. And that exhibition will feature both really sort of well-known kind of icons from SF MoMA's holdings, like Mark Rothko's great 1960 painting and Jackson Pollock's Guardians of the Secret, Mondrian and others, as well as lesser-known pieces in a project that presents the work according to spiritual themes that I think will offer new lenses through which people might experience these works.
And you're going to be all over the Bay Area. I think that's the important thing to emphasize here. New commission work, for example, at Los Altos now. And will this afford you an opportunity to bring more local artists under the purview and expose some artists perhaps that have not been at the MoMA?
Yeah, the Sika Art Award exhibition opens in September, and that's an exhibition or a program stream that has historically honored young artists of really exceptional promise. This year's award cycle worked a little bit differently, where rather than visiting artist studios and selecting the artists and then working with them on exhibitions that would be presented here on Third Street, we invited artists to come up with proposals for projects that might be presented outside in non-traditional contexts. And so that exhibition features four artists and will bring SF MoMA visitors, you know, everywhere from the Columbarium in the Inner Richmond to downtown Oakland, and so we're really excited about that.
You sound very excited. Janet Bishop, again, is curator of painting and sculpture with the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. Kenneth Baker is art critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. It's a pretty bold thing, to create a museum without walls or bricks and mortar, isn't it, Ken? And will it work, I guess, is the mind's concern about this, despite all the excitement.
Well, it will work logistically in the sense that we already see this at Crissy Field with the De Souvres, which, by the way, that exhibition is a very polarizing event, my email tells me. having written supportively about it, I had a lot of angry response from people who I'm gathering from what they say haven't actually seen it, but they don't like the idea. And but that's just one experiment. I do have some concern, frankly, about the museum's being closed for this amount of time, because it will create a hiatus. There's no way around it. And these satellite events can only do so much to sort of maintain the brand, if you will, and also the sense of institutional continuity, which people, I think, a community really needs, not to mention the larger world. So I think it's a risky move.
It's a gamble.
I understand its necessity in terms of the architectural rebuild, which is extensive, and the safety of the art. But still, it's a big gamble. And that'll be exciting for us who live here to watch it, how it plays out.
Neil, could I have you address that? Because, you know, I come from Cleveland. They closed down a number of years, longer, certainly, than you're going to be closed down. But it really hurt. I mean, it had quite an impact on the community. They forgot there was a museum there after a while.
Well, I don't think we're going to let anybody forget that we exist. I think the program that we invited Janet to develop is pretty dynamic. It runs the length and breadth of the city and the Bay Area and state of California. You know, the choice was this: we could have identified a building somewhere in San Francisco, and this has been the model that most museums have followed. To be honest, yeah. A modest building where you would set up shop. Lease a building for a couple of years, do all the tenant improvements, put in the HVAC, the climate controls, security systems, and so forth, and run a kind of mini SF MoMA in a small scale somewhere in that kind of location. But what we really are trying to pioneer here with this program is a different kind of museum. That is to say, we count on the fact that people will come back to the museum when we open in 2016, and I don't think there's any question that that will be the case. I think there's a tremendous amount of excitement about the museum and what we're doing, and we will be missed, there's no question. But in this interim period, it seems like an opportunity for us to reach out to a broader audience. So taking the De Souvres project out at Crissy Field as an example, some
did
of
you get
the,
a lot of emails about it too, by the way?
No.
Oh, okay.
Happily. But I'm sure that there is concern about it, and I could talk about it in this way. Our visitors to the museum are accustomed to seeing contemporary art within the scope of this museum, within our walls. They are probably experiencing contemporary art out at Chrissy Field, outdoors in this unorthodox situation for the first time. So it's great for them, great for our members and our regular visitors to go out and experience Chrissy Field.
You're spreading the net, as it were.
Spreading the net. Yeah. And for people who generally don't visit the museum here and perhaps don't know so much about contemporary art, maybe not attuned to it, don't know who Mark DeSouvreau is, for example, they're experiencing contemporary, and they love Chrissy Field, they're walking out on that beautiful, beautiful public space, and they have the chance to see contemporary art perhaps for the first time. So it's an opportunity to introduce a much larger audience to contemporary art.
What about the other side of this, Ken Baker? All the expansion. It's very difficult now to get new contemporary artists' pieces, just in terms of what's on the market there. For example, we've got one Magritte here, we've got one Rothko here, but to add to that collection with all this space.
Well, as I understand it, the museum's emphasis is on the future and not the past. Rothko and Magritte are 20th century artists. Their entire lifespans were 20th century. And they're not going to get any cheaper, for sure, but a building project like this is certain to attract other gifts from collectors. The reopening, for all I've said, that sounds kind of downbeat about the closure, the reopening will be a really, really big deal. I remember the opening of this building in 1995. It was an international event in the art world, and the reopening of the expansion at a moment when most museums have deferred or canceled their expansion plans will be a huge deal for this area, this city, and this institution. So that kind of thing tends to attract benefactors, which is terrific if it does. And, of course, the Fisher gift is already a kind of anchor for the new project, the expansion project in itself. And it's a kind of model. It's a kind of competitive gesture on the part of those donors to others who might be in a position to make a great benefaction. It could be tremendous for this institution. A lot of it will come by gift. It's true. The contemporary art market is, in the view of many of us, out of control economically. And just look at the auction prices from the last month in New York. Ridiculous. Beyond any imaginable connection between the value of an object and the financial figures behind it. But that's not our problem. Most of us don't have that problem.
Well said. But isn't it also axiomatic that when you get into this market, especially in the more contemporary market, you're doing a lot of speculating? It's kind of like a casino a bit, isn't it?
Well, no.
No?
In the sense that that we have expert eyes on the situation and have had for the entire time this museum has been operating, but especially for the last 25 years, when I've been watching it closely, they don't make foolish bets, by and large. And I think they can be trusted not to do that in the future as well, because they know what the stakes are. It's an embarrassment to buy an expensive piece of contemporary art or even historical work that turns out to be a dud in some sense. It doesn't prove its value by maintaining its interest through time. So everyone knows that. It's a matter of professional pride, and it's a matter of really of certain career stakes for the people involved.
I just remember reading a book and having a guest on who did a book called The Art Biz, though, and the connection between the market and the museums and the speculation about art, and it did remind me, frankly, a bit of Wall Street, I must say. But when you talk about the prices skyrocketing, Jana, give us some reassurance here. You have to be fairly prescient, don't you, when you go into this and decide what to get?
Well, we, as we're thinking about what to add to the collection, we need to take the price, into account, and we want to make sure that within any given year, as we think about the dollars that we've reserved for acquisitions, that we make the most prudent choices that we can. So, we think about it both sort of strategically and also opportunistically. Sometimes there are things that we've long identified as priorities for the collection, and then we need to kind of wait for the right piece to come along and, do our best to negotiate a good deal for the institution. We very much think of our choices in, as investments in the future of the museum, but you know, we're not looking to buy and sell, so we don't really need to be thinking about them as you know, someone, as a venture capitalist might, for instance.
But the contemporary art market's out of control, Neil Ben Ezra?
I'm echoing Ken here. I think for the most part, yes. Not in every case. I think there's certain artists whose work has become unaffordable for a museum such as ours. It's worth noting that I would guess 90 to 95% of our collection was given to the museum over the course of the last 78 years. It's tough for us to compete, there's no question, and we really do depend upon the fact that, and we're really lucky in this regard, that here in the Bay Area we have some of the finest collectors of contemporary art anywhere in the world. And they've been very generous to the museum, and this is the way most works of art enter our collection, as a matter of fact.
So the notion is pretty much, just to dovetail with what Ken said, that benefactors will be eager to get involved.
One of the things that I think goes a little bit unnoticed right now is we do have this expansion project underway. We're building a new building, capital campaign, raising a lot of money. The other thing that we have that's very, very important to this whole expansion of the museum is we have a collection campaign underway, which means that we're inviting our friends, not just trustees, but collectors in the community, to pledge works of art to be given to the museum over the course of their lives. And I think that we've been enormously successful in obtaining those kinds of promises. So I think the future is really bright for the museum.
And the capital campaign, you're at 89% when I last read right now, give or take a percent?
89%, but who's counting?
the initial figure went up, didn't it, somewhat? I mean, the campaign was that successful.
Yes. We've completed what you might call the quiet phase of our campaign, and we're at around $546 million, I think, and we are now trying to raise that up to $610 million. The reason for that being that we really want to put in place a couple of initiatives. One is we would like to make the museum free of charge for anyone under the age of 18. This would be a wonderful thing, we think, for young people to be able to come to the museum without having to buy a ticket. We also want to have a very good digital program for digital engagement. We think that, especially here in the Bay Area, this is very, very important, that people be able to experience the museum digitally as well as in person, whether they're in the building or away. And also, we want to be able to... We have a tremendous amount of gallery space that's going to be free of charge, not just for people under the age of 18, but for anyone. And we would like to be able to commission new projects and new programs from artists for those spaces.
And as long as we're talking about things free of charge, listeners should know that you can come to the MoMA beginning Thursday through Sunday free and experience part of the celebratory activities that are going on in conjunction with the closing, a temporary closing. Okay. I'm going to do this at this point. I'd like to ask you out there in the listening audience to join us, as well as in the Schwab room here, participating in this live broadcast. And the real question to ask is, what are you excited about with this new construction, and maybe what are you concerned about? And we'd like to hear any questions or comments that you might have. You can call us now at our toll-free number. It's available to you. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Again, that's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or if you're part of our live audience here, all you need to do is raise your hand, and one of our our interns mainly, or one of our producers, will come and put a microphone in front of you. You can also join the conversation on our website, kqed.org/forum, or go to our Facebook page or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'd like to hear from you as we continue talking about the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, temporary closure and on the go. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are live from the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. And as you can hear, we have a wonderful live audience here. And on June 3rd, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art will close its doors for nearly 3 years, 2.5 years, as part of a massive $610 million expansion project that will add a new wing, nearly doubling the museum's gallery space. And we're bidding farewell to the SF MoMA temporarily here in its current state with a special broadcast from the Schwab Room. Talking with Neil Ben-Ezra, the director of the SF MoMA, Janet Bishop, curator of painting and sculpture, and Kenneth Baker, art critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. And quick question from Richard, one of our listeners. Neil wants to know, what happens to SF MoMA membership while the SF MoMA is closed for 2 years?
We have an extensive membership program ongoing throughout this period, and members will have free access to our partner museums during that time. So when the Contemporary Jewish Museum exhibition opens in late June, our members are welcome to the CJM, for example. And that'll be extended right on through the next 2 years.
And what about video installations and different kinds of art installations? I mean, can you break that down for us?
Sure. One of the important things to understand is we'll have a series of outdoor programs. The De Souvre at Crissy Field is a big sculptural installation of 8 big sculptures out by the bay. But then next fall, I think September of 14, we're working with a great Los Angeles artist named Doug Aiken, who's going to be creating a couple of video projections for us out in the city of San Francisco. So it's a multimedia activity. It's not just painting and sculpture.
That's the Empire Trilogy guy?
Yes, exactly.
And I'm going to go to your calls in just a moment, by the way, and let me remind you that you can join us here at our toll-free number. We do invite your calls and emails. You can join us now. In fact, we'll go to calls in just a moment here. Or if you're in the live audience, feel free to join the program as well just by raising your hand. And we'll go to, in fact, I think we have somebody in the live audience here. Please.
Hello, good morning. My name is Linda Plack, and I live in San Francisco, and I'm with the United Educators of San Francisco. And I have a question about how you're going to accomplish your goal of going to a broader audience and whether you're going to go out to the public schools and bring art to the schools and the students of San Francisco.
Over the last few years, we've worked very hard to develop a much stronger family audience. And our next big initiative, we've written a strategic plan specifically in the education sphere of our activity. And the next big emphasis of the education program is, in fact, working with the schools. We're going to be sending our educators out to the schools, docents out to the schools, and bringing students here to the museum. So it's that we're going to work very, very hard on that. Our goal is to triple the number of school-age children who come to the museum, from about 18,000 now to approximately 55,000 when we reopen. So we're setting that program in place during this interim period.
And again, let me take this opportunity to remind listeners that you can join us at our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786, or join the conversation on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or email us, forum@kqed.org. The nature of contemporary art, do you see it in flux, and to what degree, Kenneth Baker? I mean, how's it changing? And how's this museum going to afford or absorb those changes?
Well, it's certainly always changing. I mean, everything is. It's gotten more, the experience is it's gotten more chaotic through my lifetime of observing it. As the frame of reference has become more global, we used to be able to look at New York or New York and L.A. and say, aha, this is what's going on. No more. Now, you don't know what's going on. Someone who wanted to really keep on top of it would have to travel incessantly, which I can't afford to and really couldn't stand to do. So
on those big Chronicle expense accounts, they can't send you?
Yeah, can you believe it? Even at that, it's my tolerance for travel. That's the problem. It's only a few of us really need to look for the big picture. You know, it's the concern of most of us is what's in front of our eyes. I mean, that should be our concern. You know, let the larger pattern of information present itself as it will. Really, the focus should be on what am I seeing myself, and what is it? What am I making of it? And that's where critics come in, by the way. And the museum is, of course, the repository of those possible experiences. And that's one of the reasons why we worry about it being closed, because that repository shrinks temporarily anyway. So, but again, it will expand, explode, really, when it reopens.
You want to reassure him a bit here, Janet Bishop?
Well, there's something really wonderful about meeting each other in other places, meeting each other in different cities, meeting each other at different museums. And so one of the things that I'm really hoping is that SF MoMA's usual audience will meet us there, will meet us at the CJM, will meet us at the Cantor, will meet us at the Legion, will meet us at the Asian Art Museum. I think that that we all stand to be really enriched by those exhibitions and those experiences, and the fact that they're happening somewhere else, to my mind, affords a whole other set of associations and resonances and benefits.
By the way, I should mention that you can find out more about the expansion, actually see some of the plans for it, by going to our website again, kqed.org. We like to think that in public radio we serve the same purpose, to inspire and to educate and to entertain, that a museum like this sort does. But Neil Benezer, getting back to this fundamental question, how do you envision the future of contemporary art in terms of the expansion of the museum? I mean, you've got all kinds of flux going on here and all kinds of changes as we speak.
One of the things that's very interesting about us right now is we're just on the cusp of this enormous change, and we are developing a great collection with the Fisher material and the collection campaign works that are coming in that I spoke about a few minutes ago. But it's very important that the museum also remain very dedicated to the future. We don't want to be locked into a particular period of time. I can make the argument, I think fairly persuasively, that we're going to have one of the greatest collections of the art, of the leading artists, that were work that was made in the second half of the 20th century. Great figures like Andy Warhol and Gerhard Richter and Richard Serra and so many others, where we're going to have really unquestioned strength. But it's very important for this museum to follow artists where they go. They lead us in a way. They are our docents in a certain sense. They take us forward, and we have to be very mindful of the new work that's getting made and be very responsive going forward. So we're trying to create gallery spaces that are open open to any kind of possibility that an artist might put on the table for us to respond to. We've got an entire floor, the top floor of the uppermost gallery floor, is going to be dedicated to the most recent art, and we're designing it in such a way that it's very open, very expansive, without too many walls, a lot of natural light, and a great opportunity for us to be as open to change as we need to be as a museum dedicated to the art of our time.
A lot of expansion with vis-a-vis photography, too, I noticed, even though wasn't Susan Sontag said, is that a real art, but still in that... controversy
we are,
or not?
We are
accepted and embraced photography as art.
I think that battle's been fought and won. It seems to me that photography has a special place here, both historically in terms of the history of photography in the Bay Area, from Ansel Adams right on up to the present day. One of the things that I noticed as I thought about our expansion and looked at other museums is there are other museums with great photography collections. Our friends at the Museum of Modern Art or the Metropolitan in New York, and one can name a few others, who are our competitors in terms of the quality and quantity of their collection of photography. But to my way of thinking, those museums don't do enough for the public in regards to photography. It's one thing to have those photographs in Solander boxes in storage. It's another thing to get the photographs out and on view. And when we're done, we're going to have what I believe will be the greatest configuration of space, both quantitatively and qualitatively, for photography of any museum in the country. And so we're really in a community that has a robust interest in photography. I think this is very, very, very appropriate.
Let me go to your calls, and we'll begin with a caller from Cotati. Debbie, join us, please.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to comment upon seeing art in different venues. I happened to be in New York when MoMA was closed, and they had part of their sculpture collection at the Botanical Garden in New York, and it showed it in no other way. It was by water. It was thrilling to see. So I encourage everybody to go out and see these sculptures in the new venue. And thank you for MoMA.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call here. We're trying to get some of these natural environments like she's talking about when you're on the go, Janet?
We are. Neil mentioned Doug Aitken, the Los Angeles-based artist, and we're imagining that there will be his projects will be also sited near the waterfront in 2014. We're planning to site sculpture out at the de Young Museum, adding to the wonderful works of art already on view as part of their garden. So it really is a goal to site both new projects as well as works from the collection in places where people don't expect to see them.
You know, I'm prompted to ask you, Kenneth Baker. We now have great sports teams here in the Bay Area. We have a world champion baseball team. We almost had a world champion football team. We may have a world champion hockey team. Is this going to be a world champion art city, or is it already?
It's not a competition, Michael. I'm serious. I think the emphasis on ranking is completely irrelevant. You know, I mean,
except for that's what people do when they travel. You know, they say I'm going to the greatest art museum in the country. Now it's in Cleveland. I mean, I heard that all my life growing up in Cleveland.
Yes, I mean we all.
There wasn't much else in Cleveland. You understand?
We all have our favorites, but. What does it matter, really? I mean, the question is there enough here for you? And believe me, there already is enough here for you, and there's more than enough for any of us. And it's our responsibility, really, to go into it, go deeply into it, not just compare it with, you know, the Art Institute of Chicago or the Menil Collection or whatever, what have you. You know, we make those comparisons in our heads all the time. But so what? Is the point. It's really what kind of experience can you have here? And there is a wealth of experience to be had in the museum in its unexpanded form. And when it expands, it'll be even better. There'll be more possibilities. And, of course, the off-site program that Janet's overseeing is part of that process as well, because seeing things in new situations is refreshing to our experience in various ways.
This is already a world-class museum. Don't misunderstand the import of the question here, Neil. But you want to be the best museum, though? I mean,
of course we want to be the best. No, but I think Kenneth makes a good point. We want to be the best, no question. But how do you define best? One of the ways one might define it is we would like this museum to present a unique presentation of contemporary art. So how can we distinguish ourselves? It's not just square footage, it's not just number of pictures. It's how can we create a very distinct and, if possible, unique experience.
Don't they call this a brand the mercantile world?
In the real world, yes. Yeah. But I think in our case, what we'd like to do is to build on the certain kinds of strengths that only we can offer here at the museum. So photography is one area where we think we can provide something that's so special that if one wants to understand the history of photography, one must come to San Francisco. And we're going to have what we find, the curators and I find, is that we're going to have such strength with certain artists that if you would like to understand Andy Warhol, if you'd like to understand Alexander Calder, Ellsworth Kelly, Richard Serra, Chuck Close, you're going to have to make a detour and come to San Francisco. And so it's I don't think it's about the quantity of objects or the amount of square footage. It's what can we do that's special and unique and only in San Francisco.
We'll go to our audience again. If you have something you'd like, our live audience, just raise your hand. And gentlemen here.
Hi, my name is Cole Thomason-Reedus, and I was born and raised here in San Francisco. I remember coming to the grand opening when I was 15, and as cool as the building looked, I think we all kind of realized that there wasn't much room for there. Kind of like when they opened the new library and they had to throw away books, there just wasn't a lot of room for art, and in comparison to the size of the building anyway. And so I'm just wondering, the fact that we're having to redo a building that's less than 20 years old, is that the result of an architect not doing his full job, or perhaps it's the lack of imagination of how successful the museum would be? And either way, are there steps to make sure that we're not in the same place 18 years from now?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Would you like me to take that?
Go, Neil.
I trust. So you have to put that, it's a very good question, you have to put it in context. If you remember the old building in the War Memorial, the galleries were really very modest. It was a very small museum, 3 floors, lots of works of art in hallways, a couple of very large galleries. But when our staff and our board in the late 80s, early 90s decided to, rather bravely, I think, to relocate and expand the museum here to not just south of Market but south of Mission, to build a museum with 50,000 square feet of gallery space seemed like an enormous step, and it was. But I think that at that point we had about 12,000 objects in the collection. We're now somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 objects. We're really trying to build for the future. You can never have enough space. I think that's something that any museum professional will tell you. But I think Mario Botta designed a beautiful building. We love the galleries in this building, but we simply run out of space for the quality and quantity of the program that we have to offer.
Let me bring another caller in. Sarah, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hi. Yeah, it's funny because my question, I'm a middle school teacher and I always have kids debate where does great art belong? In the homes of collectors, where it will truly be admired, or should it be in museums? And they always say museums, but I think a lot of the works of art are in storage when they're given to museums. Is that true? What percentage would you say?
Can you give us a figure, Neil?
Ooh, I hate to estimate that, although there's no question that we have a lot of works of art in storage. A lot of what our current effort has to do with putting works of art available online. So that if we have 16, 17, 18,000 photographs, we can only have a small percentage of those on view at any given time. It's just a fact. So what we're really doing is building up our online presence, and we have a real digital initiative underway right now to put much more of our collection on view and educate more about that work online. So that's one way of dealing with that problem, and it's a real problem. There's no question.
Let me thank you for the call. And it's an ongoing problem, not only in terms of showing stuff and having the room to show stuff, but when you're on the go, you have to be pretty selective about what you're going to show, too, mm-hmm. or move into another museum, et cetera. Yeah, Janet Bishop?
There were certain pieces that were much in demand by our partners. The 1960 Rothko, for instance, is one that we'll be showing at the Contemporary Jewish Museum, and then a year later in an exhibition called Gorgeous that puts the collections of the Asian Art Museum and SF MoMA together. And so we did need to think very carefully about the scheduling of our partner exhibitions throughout this 2.5-year period and the checklists of objects that will be featured in each to make sure that we could make available all of the works of art that that each of our partners was hoping to host.
We got a question from our audience. And yes, sir, in the back. We need to get a microphone to you, sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. It may sound like a ridiculous question, but I work at Information Desk, and we've actually gotten this question many times. Do you know what's going to happen to the granite from the staircase once the staircase is remade, and if they plan to recycle any of the materials that are currently there?
You know, we do get that question, and I don't have an answer right now. It's something we're going to have to do a little work on and find out. I'd have to speak to the contractors about it and see what the plans are. Sorry, I don't have an answer for that, though.
Well, sorry we don't have an answer, but if any of you have questions, again, feel free to raise your hands, and we're going to go to another caller. Susan joining us. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hey, listen, I was a little distressed in hearing when you were rolling off the names of artists that you wanted to make sure you didn't lose track of showing. I didn't hear one woman's name, and, I have a daughter who's an artist, and I know that globally a lot of women do not make the same amount of money off their art pieces that men do. What plans have you got to, with this new expansion, to make sure in all mediums you focus or at least include as carefully as possible our great female artists out there?
It's a significant question, Janet Bishop, especially in light of the fact that I know part of this whole on-the-go is to range in diversity, Asian museum, Jewish museum, African-American museum, and so forth. But what about women?
There are lots and lots of women featured in our on-the-go program. One of the images that you'll see around town very shortly is the really wonderful room-size immersive installation by Teresita Fernandez, which will be one of the highlights of the exhibition Beyond Belief at the Contemporary Jewish Museum. It's an interesting issue and one that we're really committed to. Historically, the collection that any of the current curators sort of inherited, when we came to SF MoMA was very skewed and much more heavily male than female. And in any given year, at this point, we're very aware of that. And, for instance, one of our, I'd say our most significant acquisition that we will be presenting to our Board of Trustees this week with the hope that they will give final approval for its coming into the collection is a fantastic painting by Alice Neal. It's a work in progress, and we'll certainly have women as well as men featured in all of our group shows over the course of the next couple of years, and something that we hope to do a much better job with as we continue to build the collection. It's important.
It's worth noting also that in our program over the last couple of years, we've had rather remarkable run of women photographers in our special exhibition program. Cindy Sherman, Rinica Dykstra, Francesca Woodman. In a certain sense, the last year has been, in some ways, the year of the woman photographer here. So it's something we are very attentive to, all the curators and myself as well.
Last time I heard that, we elected two senators in California.
And a Speaker of the House.
And a Speaker of the House, yeah. I think we have a question in the front row here. Do we? Yes. Hi.
Hi, I'm Gio from San Mateo. I'm not as sophisticated art goer, so I like sitting in a cafe upstairs and looking out at the sculpture garden while I have coffee and pastries. And I'm wondering if that sculpture garden is going to be still there, and if it. I know the building is going to get so tall. I'm wondering if it's going to get just really dark, that area, not getting sun, or it's going to be just go upstairs, up higher, and still have the nice view of art and the food.
So for the first couple of years while we're under construction, because of the construction, the rooftop garden will have to close, and our marvelous blue bottled coffee barista bar there. But over the long haul, the rooftop garden and the pavilion will very much be there, and will return into public access as soon as we possibly can manage it. We love that space, and it will certainly be sustained in the new SF MoMA.
Wondering if we could have the panelists address, and maybe we'll hear from our audience on this too, a concern I hear from time to time and read from time to time about museums gearing their exhibitions toward bringing a large number of people. I mean, it would be understandable. You have revenue, and you have costs, and you have all those challenges. But the idea of being, that if you have an impressionist exhibit, that people will come. As opposed to taking chances, especially with newer artists or with artists who are much more innovative, cutting edge, and so forth. I mean, this is constantly a kind of dialectic almost, isn't it, Janet?
Well, there are certain exhibitions that we mount where we really, really want, we feel like they're so important that we really want as many people as possible to see them. That was certainly the case with the Steins Collect, the exhibition that you and I talked about a couple of years ago, featured the work of artists that were collected by Gertrude Stein and her family, namely Matisse and Picasso. And that felt like it was so historically significant that it was important to us. That it reach a wide audience. I like to think that we're the kind of place that, despite our size, can also be somewhat nimble, and we tend to to feature work by younger artists. By artists who have not yet had a real audience in San Francisco through some of our program streams, like New Work, for instance, which brings national, international artists, new projects to SF MoMA audiences, or through SICA, the art award program that specifically features work by local emerging talent.
Can we hear from you on this, Kent Baker?
Yes, I think SF MoMA strikes a pretty good balance. Looking back, say, 15 years, between crowd-pleasing events like the Chagall retrospective, which actually was quite revealing to me because I thought I knew Chagall's work pretty well and didn't like it very much. And I found out when I saw the show that I didn't know it as well as I thought I did, and I liked it better than I thought I did. So, we all have something to learn from this kind of thing, to something like Calder, the Calder show, which was tremendous here, just tremendous. It was so beautifully installed, to something like the Saul LeWitt wall drawing show, which for me was a real milestone in my exhibition going experience because of my connection to that work going back to my early days in the profession. But there are other things I don't care for that much or care about that much. It's inevitable. I mean, you can't please everyone all the time, and you shouldn't try. And this museum doesn't really try. They go their own way pretty much, and I've got to give them credit for that.
I don't know any critics that can be pleased all the time, by the way. I mean,
that's a good thing.
You call yourself critics. By the way, we asked on Twitter, is 2.5 or 3 years too long for a museum to close? Will the public come back? And here are some of the responses. One listener writes, yes, should have found a way to keep some of it open or open a temporary site. Another listener, Christine, says, all I know is that we'll be coming back to San Francisco MoMA when it reopens. Great museum, great art, great people. So you get this kind of divided opinion just right away, which is probably exemplary in some ways. And I'm taking a chance here. You realize that, of course, don't you? You're rolling the dice a bit.
I think we're all going to be surprised how fast 2.5 years passes. I think the robust quality of the program we're going to offer outside the building, combined with just watching this great new building go up, I'm pretty confident that that time's going to pass quickly, and that people are going to come back in droves. And I'd love to say a word about the program that, back to your recent question. You know, one of the things that's very important for me in trying to orchestrate the overall exhibition program here is that, you know, we're a museum of modern art. We're SF MoMA. We're not a museum of contemporary art, although I would say 80% of our program is dedicated to contemporary art. What shows like this, the Great Stein Show that Janet organized a couple of years ago, do for the museum is it builds a foundation in this community of awareness and knowledge and understanding about modern art. And then what we hope it certainly does help in terms of our revenues and so forth. But in terms of the creative breadth of the museum, it allows people to obtain a strong introduction to modern art, and then they'll come back for something that's more contemporary and maybe not as familiar.
It's often a very thin line between what's modern and what's contemporary, though. I mean, it's difficult sometimes to determine. It's not just chronological.
Yeah, I mean, one can go into all kinds of arcane discussions about what's modern.
We academics often do that. Yes.
we try to avoid that whenever possible.
We have a question from the audience, please.
Well, it's not exactly a question, but I just wanted to say that I've been a member of the De Young / Legion of Honor for quite some time, but I only recently joined MoMA, and actually the reason I joined was because I was so excited about this idea of being able to go all around the Bay Area and see the art there. So I just wanted to give you a little encouragement about that. I was interested that Mr. Baker, at the very beginning, said that you had some concerns about that, and I hadn't ever imagined what concerns might be, except that, of course, people can't find the museum in the place they're used to. Would you like to elaborate on that?
With seconds left, Ken Baker.
No, not really. the sense of a location is what's going to be missing most, and whether the dispersal of the collection in other exhibitions and venues can replace that, we'll see.
Thank you, Ken Baker. Thank you, Janet Bishop. Thank you, Neil Ben-Ezra. Thank you to our audience. And another hour ahead with the Kitchen Sisters. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.